Okay. Thanks, Beth, and good morning, everybody. Well, you sound very perky. Okay, great. Okay, so as Beth said, we're going to be talking about healthcare-associated infections in U.S. nursing homes, results from a prevalence survey pilot. We want you to know what's going to be coming down. This is a really exciting project. This is a pilot project for something that's even bigger. These are the various speakers, authors, and I'm one of the site PIs, and will be presenting on their behalf today for this part. And Ruth will be doing the next part. We have no disclosures, any one of us. Okay, healthcare-associated infections in nursing homes. Well, if you look at the National Action Plan, which is really, you know, the idea is to guide us overall what we're doing in healthcare-associated infections. The action plan update for 2013 made nursing home reduction of HAIs a priority. But we don't have good burden estimates or good profile of HAIs in United States nursing homes. It's not well defined. And what data we do have is either old, or the studies are small, or the methods vary. And not surprisingly, we have a wide range in prevalence, and not necessarily associated with any changes or trends. So that's not a good basis we need to know where we're starting from to know where we're going. So that's not a good basis for that. But there are a lot of real challenges to surveillance, forget even prevention, but definitely surveillance in nursing homes, as you can see here, kind of laid out here. The barriers can be affected by documentation, insufficient, not well-established surveillance methods used routinely in nursing homes. It's not a routine activity they do necessarily very effectively or systematically. And there's limited experience with surveillance in nursing homes, certainly working in a complex study like what we're proposing. So we thought that the prevalence survey approach, kind of a one-day snapshot, would be really well-suited to the nursing home setting. It's time-limited, as you can see. It doesn't take as much resources on their part. It may take more resources on our part doing the study, but we're taking less onerous for the staff. And it's been used very effectively in acute care. If you look at if you can see that in the bottom, but it's the New England Journal in 2014, McGill et al. If you're not familiar with that study, highly recommend you read it. It was a point prevalence survey, antimicrobial use study in acute care hospitals done by our group. We think a real groundbreaking study. One-day prevalence surveys have been conducted in this setting before by the VA in the United States and by the European CDC. And as you can see, the VA has done it on several occasions. The European CDC has done it very effectively with a huge study of about 40 to 50,000 individuals enrolled. And the prevalence, as you can see, is in the range of 5%. Keep that in mind. So the objectives for this study, okay, was to certainly pilot the methods that have been used successfully in our acute care setting, but we need to make sure we may need to adapt it. We need to make sure it can work in the nursing home setting, the less resourced nursing home setting, before we kind of launch into a full-scale survey. The Emerging Infection Program is a great resource to develop national burden estimates for HAIs. We've used that before, and as I said, for the acute care setting primarily. We have 10 state health departments and their collaborators around the country who gather this information and train HAI surveillance officers who are used to not only the point prevalence survey protocol, but also very familiar with gathering data out of the clinical record for epidemiological surveillance. We want to gain some experience with the surveillance definitions. The definitions that are based on McGeer, updated by Stone et al., their citation below. These McGeer criteria used to define healthcare-associated infections in the nursing homes and have been incorporated into NHSN. When we do this large-scale survey, we need to make sure that we've trained anybody participating, either in the facility level or our surveillance officers. We needed to make sure what the issues were so we can train people appropriately when we do the big survey at the 10 sites. And we wanted to see where the challenges were with data collection. We anticipated there would be significant and do some sample size calculations because we really want to get a good national estimate so it's relevant to all of you and not just the people in the 10 sites that participate. So we did a single-day prevalence survey in nine nursing homes from four of the sites in our network. And that was Connecticut, Minnesota, New Mexico, a little palindrome there, and New York. New York did three, the rest of us did two. I get confused between New Mexico and Minnesota for some reason. They're so similar. Okay, so the nursing homes were identified. We got the low-hanging fruit, people that were willing to play and recruited by the EIP staff. So, no, it is not a random sample of nursing homes, and it was only just a couple. You see, they had to be CMS certified and a decent size, at least 120 beds, not a tiny, tiny. And then there were two teams that went in. This is how the prevalence survey worked for acute care, where we had a nursing home or a clinical team first do the initial kind of identification of individuals for the further chart review data collection. So the nursing home staff were identified and needed to be trained. They needed a leader, hopefully an RN, but as you'll see, sometimes it has to be an LPN in this setting with less experience. And then other staff members were there to help them out. So they were, you know, would sometimes, even if they did have somebody with some IT activity in the nursing home, they helped them with that. The EIP that we would then follow up a couple weeks later after the initial point prevalence data collection on the day of the survey, we come in 2 or 3 weeks later and with our epidemiologists to do the data collection with our, and we had let's say prior experience on that. And CDC kept an eye on us the whole time, so we were on track, and we were tremendous resource to us, believe me. So the nursing home team before the survey date, they basically needed to do a survey to get some information about the characteristics of the nursing home. So it's not, you know, we have some context. So we do a kind of a facility survey first. Then on the survey date, they go and they collect the data that you see there, kind of the resident characteristics of the individuals. And they could actually look at the patients. They didn't have to, where we did not. There's IRB issues with us looking at the patients and issues of inconsistency among the surveillance officers. So we did let the people in the nursing home look at the patients if need be to gather the information that was necessary. Retrospectively, we collected the information with our EIP team on some more information about the residents, specifically what devices they had, and you see some additional information that was needed to identify HAIs using the McGeer criteria. As you see, McGeer has been around for a long time, well respected in the nursing home community, the nursing home infection control community, but has been revised and updated. So we wanted to see, you know, to see how did that look. We're kind of like road testing the McGeer criteria with the stone modifications as part of this study. And you can see these are the major types of HAIs that are identified potentially, major classifications. We gathered the information necessary to identify the HAI, but the final determination whether it was an HAI or not, in this case, was made down at CDC. Okay, so there is some data analysis was done. Descriptive epidemiology, as you see, we did differences in HAI prevalence compared using chi-square tests, and we used prevalence per 100 per 100 residents. Woo. Not per 1,000. Okay, so here's some information about the facilities. The first number up there, the first row, the size is, that's the range actually, in resident bed size. Everything else is a percentage from there on down. You see about half of them were for-profit, and they were could be members of multi-facility groups. Very often we run into that in nursing homes. One kind of small corporation may own several nursing homes in the state. That could be independent or associated with a hospital, freestanding or not. As you see, of the nine, they all had a pretty similar and pretty complete of a variety of services provided with long-term and skilled nursing. Some devices such as ventilators were commonly found as well as palliative care. If you look at this is the infection control lead person, and you know resources and capacity is very important. I mean, we need to know the obviously the HAI prevalence, but it's really valuable to know to get a snapshot of what the resources are for infrastructure for further engagement for prevention and ongoing surveillance. And two of the nine were LPNs, not RNs. And these are the infection preventionists for the facility, which is usually a fairly highly trained individual. And you see, they don't have a lot of experience. There was a person with 30 years of experience, which is pretty, at least until recently in our state, was very common in the acute care, but not so in the long-term care. Of the residents' characteristics, we've proved beyond the shadow of a doubt that people in nursing homes tend to be older. The median age was 85. We didn't have to look at the patients to identify that. We were able to get that from the charts. And female. We'll talk a little bit more about long stay and short stay. Short stay is less than 100 days anticipated stay in the facility. Long stay would be more 100 days and more. And you'll see some interesting epidemiologies beginning to coalesce around that, about that that stratification. With a lot of diabetes, 30%, as you can see, a lot of wheelchair and bedridden people who, you know, you have to be concerned about their overall health status, making them susceptible for infections. Device use of about 8%. So you do have devices in nursing homes. And with 1,200 people total in our study, pretty good size for pilot. There were 70 HAIs in 67 people, so three unfortunate people had two HAIs. And as you can see, there was a lot of, in this study, a lot of infections in the gastrointestinal tract. About 37% of the infections were in the GI tract, which is higher, and we'll talk a little more about that, higher than what was found in some of the prior studies we're looking at, such as the European CDC, where they had about 4% of their infections were in the GI tract. Skin and soft tissue and respiratory tract were the other major contributors. And urinary tract, I don't know, I had this image in my head that everybody's going to be a UTI, and it was not the case. So that blew away that little preconception prejudice of mine. So there we go. Just to emphasize what I was just talking about. Amazing how data, takes care of your preconceptions. This is the same distribution for those who are visual learners. There you go. You know, people like maps rather than directions written. This is for you. And not all the GI tracts were C. difficile. That was the thing I was figuring, was actually this gastroenteritis. But there's some concerns about the gastroenteritis, which we'll talk about in a minute. But again, we're trying to road test the definitions, and maybe there's an issue here. Or maybe there was just like a big outbreak or something, because remember, this is one point in time. And then a lot of cellulitis, big surprise there. That tended to be where we found things. A lot of cold, pharyngitis. Notice there's no flu, which is kind of surprising. Maybe we'll talk a little bit more about that. And there is, of the urinary tract infections, it's not all, there's actually a fair amount of catheter-associated, urinary tract. This image is like, oh, they're just sitting there, urinating, and then it gets dark, and then somebody, is going to, think it's they're going to be getting infections, or they're going to be, and it's not going to have anything to do with a catheter, and that wasn't the case. If you look at the characteristics here, the prevalence, there's an overall prevalence was 5%, but it varies by age. Though it wasn't statistically significant on chi-square analysis, you do see a trend upward from the older individuals. The other thing that was statistically significant was the difference by stay and device. So short stay individuals were more likely to have an HAI, and the people with a device more so than the people without a device, and not totally surprising. Thank you. So of the in the device use, you can see, again, that there seems to be, it was the short stay people rather than long stay people with devices had the higher prevalence. And you can see that on this as well. I mean, in short stay people in the facility for less than 100 days with a device, their HAI prevalence was 20%. So that's where we want to find out a lot more about that group. Again, this is going to help us, I think, focus what we're looking at when we do the full-scale prevalence survey, and it's already giving us some areas where you could even begin to think about some prevention focus even now, knowing that this particular subpopulation is a particular high risk. The thing also to notice is that short stay being a smaller group than the long stay, you can't forget the long stay, because actually there's more HAIs in the long stay group than the short stay. The short stay has a very particularly high prevalence in that group. Oh, there you go. So there's limitations to the study, obviously, you know, and it's understood. It's a pilot, so there's small numbers of nursing homes are going to meet. There was, you know, once you get data like this, you want to start, you know, especially the epidemiologists among us, want to start really like querying that data. Could we assess differences in HAI types by, you know, stratifying the residents? We'd like to be able to try to get at that. We can't get at that yet, especially if you're trying to design prevention collaboratives around particular pathogens or devices. You're going to need that kind of information. Can't get that yet. And the facility level factors, we'd love to eventually, once we do the full-scale survey, be able to look at some of the facility level factors and see if we can correlate those with HAI prevalence or distribution. Can't do that yet. It looks like we believe that there may have been some inclusion of non-infectious diarrhea into the gastroenteritis define HAIs. It's not supposed to be that. The actual, if you look at the McGeer criteria as revised, say exclude the non-infectious diarrhea. We think that maybe some of those might have slipped in. That may be what's going on there. And the other surprise, is that there were some individuals that had positive screening, positive tests for influenza, but couldn't meet the full criteria because of some exclusions in the criteria. They didn't have enough symptoms to qualify them, so we weren't able to count them. So we may have fewer GIs and more respiratory, maybe, if there was if the McGeer criteria were a little different and applied appropriately. So overall, so HIA prevalence, the bottom line, is about 5.3%, consistent with what these other large studies have done, and this little pilot is consistent with that, so we're in the right ballpark. We obviously need to kind of look at the GI definition, make sure that we appropriately apply that when we do the full-scale survey, and that we need to kind of continue to do some more study of the short-stay residents as well. So we may have a lot of HAIs in nursing homes. Not a big surprise, but here we have some evidence for that, and that's important for, obviously, planning and resource allocation and further study. And there is, again, a lot more focus on the HAI epidemiology stratified by length of stay that we're going to be doing. Okay. So I want to thank and acknowledge our friends at the CDC Nicola Thompson. I was very shy and didn't put her name on this, but she should be on there too. The EIP staff, I think, did a great job. The surveillance officers did a wonderful job. And I really want to put a tremendous thanks to the folks in the nursing homes. They really stepped up and did this. They did a great, really great contribution. So thank you all.
So we do have a couple minutes for questions. If anybody has any, please step forward to this microphone.
Thank you, Rich. I'll step back to the microphone. My question for you, I know looking at the short stay residents and being linked to device utilization, but was there any other theories why short stay residents may have a higher prevalence rate?
No, we don't really know yet. I mean, they're more acute patients. They're very often younger, but we don't really have any real handle on why that might be. I think that's what we really need to kind of look at. Device use, but there may be other factors we need to, I think, needle out on that, but yes. In some ways, you know, because they're more acute patients, maybe not so surprising, you know, because they're in shorter-term rehabilitation status. But on the other hand, you know, you have a lot of very frail, immunocompromised older patients, and their rates were considerably lower.
Marion Kennedy, I was just going to expand. You might hypothesize that in the past, the people who are now in the short-term used to still be in the hospital. And so what we really are seeing is a past hospital population now in a nursing home setting. And so I'm wondering whether that is partly what we're seeing.
So the point was that this may be kind of carryover from the acute care hospital. So in other words, we don't want to lose you, Marion. The conference is not over yet. The physician statements, some have not been passed yet. I don't know if we should take this moment to congratulate Marianne for getting the CRE position statement on the consent calendar. That'll teach you for asking me a question. But yes, you know, I think that, you know, to see are these present on the mission things that are, we're not you know, screening out, or is there you know, people bringing in something brewing, I guess is the idea. Yeah, remember, this is a spectrum of care, so yeah, this is important information.
Thank you for this great presentation, Ivan from Nevada. One thing which I'm not sure about, you presented the prevalence, like, is that prevalence good, is it bad, or is it expected?
Because
how can we compare ourselves? Not to ourselves, to gold standard, if there is something like that.
Right, so the question is kind of like, is this kind of where we're at now, where the apparent prevalence based on this pilot study, because again, it's just this pilot of about 5%. Is that something, you know, is that like what you would expect, or is this something of like of grave concern in terms of just assuming it's pretty accurate, assuming that? I would say it's kind of based on the fact that the Europeans are seeing a 5% prevalence and that those serial studies in the VA are in that range. I think that I thought that was encouraging. It seemed like it's kind of where we would expect it to be. I mean, it's sobering because 5% of, you know, there's a lot of 1.5 million long-term care facility residents. That's a huge population with HAIs. But I think in terms of the prevalence is kind of what I was expecting to see.
Thank you.